भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Super Soul Farm. This is Wisdom of the Sages, your daily yoga podcast with your host Raghunath and co-host, bestie, and senior educator at the Bhakti Center in New York City, Kastubha Das. Welcome to our show. We are here with Mara, our executive producer, and our dearmost teacher, mentor, spiritual inspiration on Sunday, interview day, His Holiness Raghunath Swami, who's joining us live on Zoom. Raghunath Swami, welcome to our show. We are so honored to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so grateful to be with all of you.
Kastubha, do you want to say anything, introduce Maharaj?
I would be honored to introduce Maharaj. Raghunath Swami is one of the world's most important voices from the Bhakti Yoga tradition. He spent his youth traveling and searching through different countries and cultures, yearning for an experience of truth, which culminated in meeting his spiritual master, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and becoming his disciple. And he spent his last 50 years or so internalizing the teachings that he received from him and sharing those teachings and practices with others. Among the many ways that he shares this is through his books, among them, The Journey Home, which is just an absolutely fascinating, thrilling, illuminating story, a memoir of his travels through Europe, the Middle East, and ultimately through India, meeting a lot of the important figures in the world of yoga and spirituality. And also the book, The Journey Within, which is a New York Times bestseller and an excellent introduction to bhakti yoga. He's not only a spiritual guide, but he's also a community builder and activist. Some of the important projects that he's been instrumental in creating and guiding are the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Mumbai, which is just an absolutely amazing institution where people receive not only expert care for the body, but also for the mind and for the soul. They are doing cutting edge work in the field of spiritual care. The Govardhan Eco Village, which is just a completely incredible program. It's a farm, eco-sustainable village where they have incredible care for animals and for the earth. And they're showing the world ways that we can live a more sustainable life. It's been recognized and won many, many awards, including by the UN. There's also the Midday Meals program in Mumbai, which feeds over 300,000 children in the schools, ghetto slums of Mumbai every day with nutritional, spiritually sanctified food.
And delicious.
Delicious as well. I could go on and on about Raghunath Swami's work and the work that he's done with his communities in India, although it would take too much time. Also, of course, very near and dear to my heart is that he's very instrumental in helping guide and direct the Bhakti Center in New York City, which I'm a part of. So there's so many accomplishments that he's had, too many to go through, but also just on a personal level, I think that Raghunath and I should share something because he means so much to the two of us. Maybe you could share something about that, Raghunath.
Raghunath Swami's been incredible personal GPS in my life, directing me, giving me always there when I need a question, when I have a question answered. All those things you said take up a lot of time to do. It's not like this stuff's going on easily. It takes tons of manpower, and it's by his vision and his direction. It's just going on. And sometimes when you see people who are busy, to talk to them, to get a moment with them, it's like impossible to do it. But Maharaj has this unique, and if you've been with us at the Eco Village, at the Govardhan Eco Village, when we do our trainings there, he'll come by our table and he'll speak with us and he'll make it seem like he has all the time in the world for you. He never makes it seem like he's got 1,000 people waiting for him or things to do. He makes you feel he's very, very present. And it's one of these qualities, like, I feel like I need to live that one myself. Because when people ask me, they usually preempt their conversation with me, like, hey, Raghunath, I know you're busy, but Maranatha Swami has this way of just making us all feel peaceful, even though he's got so much on his plate. But another great quality that he has that's really affected me is I always go back to probably the darkest, roughest patch in my spiritual life when my, you know, chariot wheel was really caught in the mud and it was just stuck in life. And he has this way, Maharaj, you have this way of seeing some greatness in people when they can't even see it in themselves. And it allows us to take a step out of our very low incarnation of ourself that we've created and enter into a new body, almost a new mind, a new consciousness, by just seeing us as something greater than we are. And I'm forever in debt to you for that. And every time you speak to me, I feel like you're just lifting me out of some old skin, so to speak, like a snake. Like a snake shedding skin. And I'm really, really, really grateful that you're here for us. And you're really directing Wisdom of the Sages. You're directing my family. I'm like a regular basis. There's not a moment. We think about you all day long. And so for those who don't know Maharaj and are just coming to the show, sometimes through Joe Rogan, or they're coming from some other channel, Maharaj is our inspiration, and we welcome you back. This is the second time we had you on the show. We're so happy you're here. So happy you're in our life. I don't know how to say that anymore.
I was thinking maybe before we start the conversation, Raghunath, if you want to make the kind of typical announcements that we make, because I got a feeling we're going to get caught up in this. And
sure. Well, if you'd like to join, this is our daily yoga podcast, Saturday and Sunday. Saturdays, we take questions. We sleep in till 8 o'clock, roll out of bed and start asking questions about our spiritual life. So if you have a question you want to send it in, please email Mara at wisdomofthesages108@gmail.com. And we try to field those questions as best as we can. Also, Sunday, we have special guests, and Raghunath Swami is our special guest. We also do that at 8 o'clock. But if you'd like to join us live on Zoom, you can also email Mara. We do it at 5 a.m. Eastern time every day. And it's a great way. If you're new to this, it's hearing truth on a regular basis. And this yoga wisdom philosophy is not meant for people thousands of years ago. It's living right now. And those who've been on Zoom with us on this for the last year or so, they know it's helping direct our life, help us make better choices, help us upgrade our life. So if you'd like to join us, you're welcome. We'd love to have you. And also, Wisdom of the Sages is a listener-supported podcast. If you'd like to support us in any way, join our Patreon community at patreon.com/wisdomofthesages. And we have a whole group of discourse that we do on a regular basis, talking about questions and philosophy and recipes and music, and it's a whole beautiful transcendental maze.
And along with classes and readings and so on, are there on Patreon.
Yeah, okay. And tonight I'm doing a Sweet Baby Krishna class at 7 p.m.
All right.
You can join us there on Patreon tonight.
Okay, so let us begin, huh? Maharaj, our first question for you is that you are a representative of a spiritual tradition which has a particular faith. And our question is there a universal message within it that can resonate with people who don't share your faith?
Thank you. I am so grateful, so honored that I am with all of you, and I hope you could hear me.
We can.
You study the Srimad Bhagavatam daily. And in the first canto, or the part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one particular verse on which all the 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam are built upon. There was a great king, Parikshit, who was about to die. He had 7 days to live. And he asked Sukadev Goswami, who was representing all the great sages and saints and yogis throughout the land. He asked, with this 7 days, I do not have time to go through all the scriptures and meet all the different teachers. Please tell me, what is the essence? What is true dharma? What is the heart of all the religions, of all the spiritual practices? And the answer was given. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahoitiki apratihata yayatma suprasediti. This was actually spoken in Naimisharanya, that the very supreme dharma, the essence of all religion, the very heart of spirituality, is that path which awakens love for the Supreme Being. And that love, when it is unmotivated by selfishness, by egoism, it can completely satisfy the self. In all the great religions of the world, we find that we should know ourself. We have this body, we have this mind, but the living force that's animating this body and mind, seeing through the eyes and hearing through the ears, thinking through the brain, that is, in Sanskrit, the Atma, or the spirit soul. And the nature of that spirit soul in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that we are all part of the Supreme Soul. We are all part of God. In our nature, our essential inherent nature is to love God. And loving God is like putting water on the root of a tree. Naturally, that water extends to every part of the tree, the leaves, the branches, the twigs, the flowers. And similarly, when we awaken that inherent love that is who we are and who we've always been and who we will always be, then that love extends to all living beings. And this is the essential universal principle of all religion, of all spirituality, to awaken our deepest potential to love God and express it in a spirit of compassion to all living beings. The Bhagavad Gita tells, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na sochati na kangshati samasarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. That when one achieves Brahma Bhuta, which means spiritual awakening, then one is self-satisfied. One is joyful because one finds such happiness within oneself. One doesn't hanker or lament for things of this world. And in that state, one sees all living beings with equal vision. One aspires to live as a true friend for all living beings. That is compassion. And bhakti, bhakti is actually that state of consciousness. And it's at the heart and the essence of spirituality. And all the great spiritual teachers throughout history, they have taught this principle, perhaps in different languages, perhaps according to the time, place, and circumstance, with different ceremonies and rituals, and perhaps various levels or degrees of this knowledge. But at the heart of it is the awakening of this love and this compassion.
Thank you for that thorough answer, Maharaj. And it's so important because we're living in a world that, I don't know, to some of us, it feels like we're more polarized than ever. I really appreciate your sharing that and understanding how Bhagavatam can help us realize that ultimately these spiritual paths they're meant to help us understand how we can be a true friend of every living being. Would you like to ask a question, Raghunath?
Sure, Maharaj, thank you. The coronavirus and all that comes with it, the deaths, the pain, the loss, the lockdowns, the quarantines, the economic ramifications, we're all in a little bit of a panic, what's up next. It's unique in the history of the world, and we've yet to see how it eventually plays out. Can you share your thoughts about how you interpret these events, perhaps the lens that we should see through to interpret it for our own well-being and our own spiritual evolution? And is there some message that we're supposed to take from it and hold on to? Because there's a lot of emotions out there, and there's a lot of fear. Can you shed some light on this for us?
Where there is suffering due to fear, due to pain, heartbreak, death, the human spiritual nature is that we feel compassion, and in whatever way possible, we want to help. And we're in a situation where there is so much fear and confusion and so much heartbreak and death. And to see it through the lens of compassion actually helps us to rise above fear and confusion. Throughout history, pandemics and epidemics have come and gone. And with all our advancement in technology and science, we're not an exception. It's the way nature works. And the way I see it is, while we're trying to help by protecting our own bodies and our own families and loved ones, knowing that this body is a gift, it's God's gifts and it's sacred, because the body has inherently a sacred purpose. So to protect the body, to protect the bodies of our loved ones, is a sacred duty, especially if we understand its sacred purpose. And that purpose, in its highest, most inclusive state, is to be an instrument of God's compassion in our life in this world. Somehow or other, there's so many distractions in the world, whether they're ideological, technological, political, or just our own body and mind. We forget what we really want in our life. And in the computer age, we have our reset button. We press this button to kind of erase so many of the things that are there on the screen and bring us back to our original natural position. And I see this as we're trying to help in whatever way we can, protect ourselves and others. Nature is pressing a reset button so that we can take inventory of our values, our desires, our purpose, and what really is meaningful in our life, and how to focus our attention on addressing the real issues that have true relevance to our life, our families, our loved ones, our society, our own true self within, and God. These are the most important relationships we have, and the heart yearns to have these relationships. So with all the distractions and diversions that we are vulnerable to, we have an opportunity individually and collectively to take some time, to take a step back. And what direction do I really want to take in my life? What is the character and the values spiritually, socially, and individually that I want to make sacred in my life? And this is an extraordinary crisis. It's unprecedented, but it also gives us unprecedented opportunities.
Thank you, Maharaj. You know, you mentioned address that this is a way that we can hit a reset button, and you know, I'm sure both individually and collectively. And you mentioned it can help us focus and address the real issues. And you mentioned family, loved ones, society, and God. And you know, as you're saying that, I was also I think there's still more questions we want to ask around this current crisis, but just that reminded me of some of the work that you do with the Govardhan Eco Village, which is a place, you know, Raghunath and I, we visit every year. Now we teach trainings there every year. And we remember years ago when you brought us there and it was just mostly just open land. And it was just an idea, a vision in your mind, a vision of service that you could provide for your guru and for the world. And it occurs to me that, you know, what really strikes so many things about what you all do there strike me. And I'm interested in hearing about the principles that are behind it. But when you mentioned that and you said society, what one thing that the Govardhan community, Govardhan Eco Village communicates to me is that animals are also part of that society. When I see how much care goes into caring for the animals there, and I wonder if that's also an important part of what we're meant to reset, you know, how we think also about the animals. And maybe you could just share thoughts about that and about the Govardhan Eco Village in general and the inspiration and behind that and the principles involved in that.
Thank you, Kasturba. Thank you, Raghunath, for this opportunity. We build a house or a building on a foundation. And our community at Govardhan Eco Village and whatever other projects we're involved in are built on a foundation. And that foundation is a principle, the principle of harmony. To live in harmony with our own true self, to harmonize the body, the mind, with our own spirit, with our own true self, and to harmonize our speech, our actions, and as far as possible, our thoughts with God, with other living beings, all living beings, and with nature. Sacred ecology, animal rights, humanitarianism, spiritualism, they're all integrated. If we value living in a spirit of compassion as a foundation principle in our life, then how could we actually live this, share this? Yoga means harmony. Yoga doesn't just mean an exercise or a particular type of meditation. Yoga, in its true sense, is to live in harmony with ourself, with God, with nature, and with all living beings. Union. So it is this principle of harmony and compassion, which is the basic principle of the aspiration to love, that is the foundation of Govardhan Eco Village. So we're trying in our own small way, because in this big world, in this big universe, we're all very small. But the beautiful thing about life is even the smallest thing has unlimited value and size if it is done with sincerity. Mother Nature is providing everything for us. Just as a little baby is completely dependent on his or her mother, we are completely dependent on Mother Nature for the sunshine and the rain and the grain, for providing our body, our minds, our everything. And to respect the sacredness of nature as God's property entrusted to us means that whatever nature provides, we're grateful. When we have gratitude, we do not exploit and we do not neglect. When we have a grateful heart, we can appreciate the value of what we're receiving. Every breath is so valuable. It's keeping us alive. It's keeping our loved ones alive. To be aware of Mother Nature's gifts to us, whatever we receive from her, we want to return in such a way that we replenish her. We show our gratitude to her. We don't show neglect, exploitation through pollution. So as far as possible, we try to live in that harmony with nature. Life is sacred. If we understand the principle that wherever there is consciousness, there is the presence of a part of God, the soul. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastami suni chaiva supakecha pandita samadarshan. Enlightenment, wisdom, is the capacity to see the divinity, the sacredness of who we are. Unless we learn to appreciate our true self and learn to love God within ourselves, then it's very difficult to actually recognize the sacredness of life wherever and however it exists and God's presence in that life. In the Western world, people love their dogs and their cats and their pets. They're not humans, but because they have a personal relationship, they interact. cows, donkeys, sheep, birds, all these animals, they value their life very much the same way we do. They protect and love their children very much the way we do, because they're life loving. They're pleasure seeking as we do. The more we come in contact or in harmony with our true self, the more we feel respect and compassion for nature, for animals, and naturally for other people, whatever their race, whatever their religion or no religion, whatever their sex, whatever their nationality. We're all essentially brothers and sisters on a spiritual platform. Yoga is to come in harmony with ourselves and at the same time live with a character, with values of seva, where there's no greater opportunity than to uplift others, to enlighten others, to serve others. And this simple principle to share our appreciation and our eagerness to serve the sacredness of life, the compassion of God, who we call Krishna, through nature and through our own spiritual practices and through how we deal and interact with every aspect of the world. That's the seed of what Govardhan Eco Village is trying to do. And what's really beautiful and really incredible is if we just cultivate that little seed of this aspiration within our own heart and share it with others and receive that sharing from others, then it's actually incredible what together we could do.
Thank you, Maharaj. You know, normally I take notes during the podcast, and then I kind of share those in the descriptions. But like Raghunath and I are usually chit-chatting and going back and forth, and every now and then there's something worth noting down. But like every sentence coming out of your mouth is like
noteworthy.
Is very noteworthy.
You know, Kostub, I think it's important that for those who haven't been to the Govardhan Eco Village, when you think of an Eco Village, I don't know what comes to mind. Simple. It's incredibly cutting edge, simple yet sophisticated village of sustainability. It's quite impressive, not by Indian standards, by global standards. They've won global awards for what the monks have done, and the monks are all engineers studying sustainability. It's so impressive.
Yeah.
The rooms we stay, so you think, well, I'm staying in an Eco Village, am I staying in a hut? No! I'm staying in this incredible, like, condominium built of earthen bricks. It's actually unbelievable. We're not in, like, the Three Little Pigs huts. It is, like, this beautiful work of art. It's, like, very, very cutting edge. And it's really mind-blowing what all the monks there are doing. And they host us. And so for the month, and I see a lot of faces here that have gone by Radha Swami's mercy and his direction and inspiration, we've created this Super Soul Academy where we do these trainings every year. And for January, we get to like check out of life. It's our little own private, you know, what's going on now, we're shutting everything down. We all go to the Eco Village for about a month. And we run our 300-hour training there, and which is like a bhakti cultural immersion for those who are already yoga teachers. Kostuba and Doyal run the wisdom training, which is studying of sacred literature. This year we have a kirtan academy where people want to study and add kirtan. Yoga teachers add to their classes, and also This year also, we're having a practical Ayurveda course for 2 weeks. So you can check all that stuff at supersoulyoga.com. And we are always thrilled to check out of the material world and really check in. And there's nothing beats an immersion, because the backdrop of it is beautiful. It's that connection with nature and the connection with all the hosts and having Maharaj there, just like as a bee buzzing around. It's so nice. It's for me, it's the best thing. All year I look forward to this, to just to be around really like-minded people who want to upgrade the quality of their life.
You know, I agree with every word coming out of your mouth, Roganath, and I encourage people to come and be with us next January. And while we're plugging away, we should also mention that Radha Swami and yourself will be co-leading a one-day online bhakti retreat hosted by the Bhakti Center. And that's on Saturday, May 9th. It goes from 7:15 a.m. till 5:15 p.m. So it's a full day. Yogi Charu will also be part of that. Genevieve Harrison will also be part of that. So those interested in that, please go to the Bhakti Center website. And on the homepage, you'll see it advertised, the one-day online Bhakti retreat.
Yeah, that'll be great. We usually do it every year live. I'm really happy we're still doing it despite what's going on. And it's going to be a little bit different, but I'm happy it's still going on.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be in Mara. You know, we always say on the show, our power, we develop our power from the people we associate with. And the people that we associate with can bring us way down or lift us way up. So by doing these things and having special guests like yourself, Maharaj, I feel lifted. I've been in a cesspool, and you're lifting me out right now. I feel lifted out. Thank you.
Love lifts you up where you belong, Roganath.
It's quite amazing. So in this community here on that we're doing, and if you're new to the community, welcome. Join us every morning. We do Srimad Bhagavatam class, and we study together, and it helps us recalibrate our day. Just hearing truth on a regular basis, it helps us in the course of our choices. And so we'd like to do it early in the morning. If you're not used to waking up early in the morning, try it. Make an experiment. Wake up early. You'll find it's the most precious time of the day. If you got kids, it's before the kids get up. If you know, it's before there's any any busyness going on. Although we have a bunch of Europeans who just sort of check out from work and they're watching it too without their bosses knowing. We see that going on. And it's great for couples. There's a lot of couples here watching today. People bring their pets. They bring their children. Bring everybody to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everybody benefits. And especially if you're a yoga teacher or study and want to really learn how to apply yoga philosophy, this is our passion. And we're happy to have you. You want to continue on, Kostu, with these questions?
Sure. Let's get back to the current crisis with the coronavirus. And, you know, Maharaj, maybe there's some advice that you could share with people. There's different kind of tensions or pressures that are going on. A lot of people are struggling and feeling disconnected, being away from friends and loved ones, or even being away from their occupations and the people that they normally interact with. I've heard that lawyers are predicting that divorce rates are going to skyrocket just because of the increased tensions that are there. So relationships also may be under strain. Do you have any advice for how we can maintain our mental well-being, how people can maintain their mental well-being or maintain their relationships well? People, whether we're just isolated with our own mind and feeling some mental pressure, or whether we're living in close quarters with people for a long time under different kind of tension, could you suggest ways that we might be able to maintain our mental well-being spiritually through this?
One of the primary reasons for anxiety and stress and breakdowns of relationships is a basic principle. Our tendency is that we want to be controllers. I want to be a proprietor. I want to be a controller. I want to be an enjoyer. Bhagavad Gita tells, these are the three principles that keep us in a suffering condition. Each and every one of us has some degree of control. Whether we're living in a little hut, whether we're multi-billionaires, everyone has some degree of control. But ultimately, the way the world is, we are faced with what we cannot control. Let us give an example of time. When one's a little child and is playing, and the father says, or the mother says, you must go to school. And the child says, but I like to play. And the parents say, but when you grow up, you will need an education. And the child says, I do not want to grow up. Does the child have a choice of whether to grow older and older and older? By the power of time, old age, disease, and ultimately death are inevitable. Whoever we are, whatever we believe or don't believe, we're under the control of time. And there's adiatmaka, adibhautaka, adidaivaka. There's anxieties, sufferings caused by our own body and mind, by natural disturbances, by other living beings. How other people treat us. How nature, whether it be earthquakes, or storms, or cold, or heat, or pandemics, diseases. There are many things within this world that are just not within our control. And as long as we're trying to control, as long as we're set on an expectation that things are going to go according to the way I want it to go, then it makes us vulnerable to anxiety, frustration. We should do the best we can, but understand that when things are beyond our control, we need to adjust ourselves. And that's why, as Raghunath was saying, we need a compass, or in today's world, a GPS in our life. When a ship is in the ocean, sometimes it's a sunny day with cool ocean breezes. And other days, there's massive storms and winds. Some days it's clear, some days it's so foggy you can't see anything. But we need that compass so that whatever comes in our life, we're going in the right direction. We have a standard of in whatever comes to us, we're going to respond to it in harmony with the direction we have committed ourselves to in our life. With the GPS, we type in a particular destination, and there's a voice that tells us, turn right in 500 feet. Turn right in 200 feet. And we know we're supposed to turn right, but we get distracted and we keep going. And then the GPS tells us to recalibrate and find a route to bring us back to where we were going. That is so important in our life. Today, because we're so much with ourselves, and in many cases, with our family, our close ones, our loved ones, there's more opportunity to disagree. There's more opportunity to fight. There's more opportunity to feel frustrated that this person is not fulfilling my expectations and I'm responding accordingly. But actually, in our relationships, if we have this GPS that as a husband, as a wife, as a partner, this person is entrusted my care and I'm entrusted their care. And whatever may happen, to respect one another, to enlighten one another is truly the principle of love, and it's truly the principle of relationship. And when we're in a situation where that's tested, where it's difficult, but we live in harmony with the compass of our purpose in our life, our value in our life, that's the time when we grow the most with wisdom, with inner satisfaction, and with spiritual progress.
Thank you, Maharaj. I pray that all of us, through hearing your words, will make this a time where we can grow the most, actually. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being our GPS.
You are.
GPS, a little Radhanaswami GPS. Wouldn't it be a great product to have with you wherever you go?
I am your servant, Raghunath. Wherever you are, I just want to be with you.
You just do the course of the day. Tell me what to do. Don't eat that, Raghunath. You've eaten too much.
Raghunath and Kostuba, both of you, you make the most difficult pursuit in life so happy and joyful and humorous.
Whereas you've made spiritual life joyful. You bring it all. It's grave. You make it very grave. You understand the depth of it, but you also have your light heart about it. Your childlike heart about it all makes us all relate to it. You're so relatable. And what I really love about you is you go past all the externals and go right for the essence, which makes you so approachable to the whole world. Truthfully, the whole world. You're not building a house that only a few people can live in. Only the people that dress like you or think like you or wear the clay marking it. You make it a very wide gate and you welcome people with the spiritual life. And we just try to follow in your footsteps, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I say that if anybody likes this podcast, it's so much of it is just because of what you've shared with us. We're in our tiny way trying to share that same message and mood. So thank you so much, Maharaj.
Also, if you're new to the podcast and you're new to bhakti, which is a lot of people out there are very new to this stuff, a real great introduction book is Radhanath Swami's A Journey Home, autobiography of an American Swami. And it's his incredible story, hitchhiking from Europe to India. Yes, a lot of us, especially in America, are like, you can even do that? Yes, you can. And he did it. And he did it with nothing. He did it with nothing. Ended up in the Himalayas living with sadhus. Besides a great story, and it is a great story, it is peppered with deep philosophical truths, stuff. And you will find your own journey by reading The Journey Home. And it's the book I recommend to everybody who's new to this stuff, because it's like yourself, it's very, very approachable. And the things that you were going through on your path, it affects a lot of us because we're all going through stuff as well, Maharaj. And we like to see what's on the other end of this. You're on the other end of this, Maharaj. We're so happy. We want to be more like you. It's good to have heroes in this world. You're my hero. You're my hero, Maharaj.
Raghunath, I love to serve you. You inspire my heart as you do everyone. Thank you.
Maharaj, we have another question. We have many of our listeners in our regular audience are healthcare providers. And currently they're risking their own health to serve others. And of course, we're very concerned with all the staff at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, and we pray and hope that they're doing well. Is there a message that you would like to share with our essential frontline responders to this coronavirus epidemic or pandemic?
My message to all of these heroic, wonderful people is I extend my deepest gratitude to you. And please, you do everything within your ability to be safe. My beloved Guru Srila Prabhupada, he gave a simple analogy that if a person is drowning, we have to stay above the water ourselves to help that person. Otherwise, if we're drowning, we cannot save another drowning person. And when we go into airplanes, we're told that if the oxygen mask comes, mother should first put it on herself and then the other, the child. So please, all people who are in the front lines serving humanity, stay safe yourself in every way, and then extend yourselves to do whatever you can to be an instrument of compassion for these other people. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, people need nourishment on all three of these levels of life. And as far as possible, let us provide that nourishment. Thank you. Thank you for taking this risk. Thank you for selfless service.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Kostuba, did you ask Maharaj about, Maharaj has this hospital as well. What's it like in Bombay? It's a group of his students that are doctors, and they put together with Ranaswami's vision this incredible hospital. It's almost worth it, Maharaj, if you don't mind, I just want to mention something about the hospital. The hospital is one of those, your hospital is so wonderful, it makes me want to get sick. Some of our students who have been sick and have gone to that hospital have said, you know, Raghunath, you took me on pilgrimage, but the most spiritual thing I experienced the entire pilgrimage is when I went to the hospital.
It's true.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. And it's that care and the love that you exude that your students take on. Yoga teachers out there, that's why you gotta be careful who your teachers are. You become like your teachers. And all those doctors at the hospital, it's almost like they're empowered by you, and they have that same grace and bedside manner and compassion like you have. And it is really, you feel like you're in like a spiritual snow globe when I'm there. How are all your people holding up at the hospital in Mumbai?
It is a challenge in that particular area of Maharashtra state in India, which is called Mira Road, a section of Mumbai. We are perhaps the prominent hospital. It's about a 300-bed hospital. It's growing in size. And of course, the coronavirus in Maharashtra, in the Bombay area of India, is the hardest hit place in the country, as far as I know. So, we've dedicated a large portion of our beds, and we have satellite hospitals that have been given to us, actually, and we have an entire hospital that's dedicated only to treating this. The doctors, the nurses, the staff, they have to risk their lives to serve. But there's no greater honor than to risk our life to serve, especially when there's a spiritual purpose underlying it. In the Christian religion and the Jewish religion, the first and great commandment is to love God with your heart, your mind, your soul. And the way to express that is to love your neighbor as yourself. This is a universal spiritual principle. We spoke the same principle at the beginning of our talk today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that what do you gain by achieving the whole world if you lose your own soul? So Bhaktivedanta Hospital is based on this simple principle to follow. We follow Bhakti Yoga. We chant God's names, Krishna's names, for the purpose of accessing compassion and love that's within us all. It's the true treasure of life. To access that, and then in whatever profession, whatever occupation, whatever role we are in society, we express that love for God and compassion for others beyond any sectarian ideas or conceptions. Compassion is universal. The sun does not shine for one person or one country. The sun shines for everyone. And similarly, when the heart finds the light of love within it, then it shines for everyone. So the Bhaktivedanta Hospital is, you know, there's doctors and there's nurses and there's administrators and there's electricians and there's housekeepers and there's cooks and all of these people. They're united on a simple principle. Bhaktivedanta Swami is the name of our guru, Srila Prabhupada, and it's dedicated to the spirit that he inspired us with, the spirit of whatever our particular field of life is, we access through our spiritual practice this devotion and this compassion, and we apply it to our words and to our actions. So Bhaktivedanta Hospital has been through the crises of massive earthquakes, emergency relief, and tsunami, and terrorist attacks. So emergencies are nothing new there. Mm. And this coronavirus is a pandemic, which is an inconceivable crisis. But whatever may come, we try to be, you know, prepared for seva, to serve with compassion. But in order to do that, we need internal strength. And for us, it's a spiritual strength that motivates us.
Incredible.
I don't know if that answers your question. I don't even remember the question.
It did, Marsha. Maybe I could share a personal story. You know, some years back, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, you know, my wife was going through a health crisis. And, you know, America, although it's a land of, you know, so much wealth in one sense, it's also a land, you know, where, you know, healthcare is the ability to receive healthcare can be so incredibly expensive that we weren't really able to access it. And at that time, Radha Swami very kindly made every arrangement that we needed for us to fly to Mumbai and get her that help. We stayed in the Bhaktivedanta Hospital for about a week. Now, I always appreciated the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. And I always appreciated, I had super high respect for the entire spiritual community that you lead, the Radha Gopinath, the temple in Mumbai. And the quality of the thousands of Krishna Bhaktas in that community.
Thousands.
Many thousands. I mean, there's just not enough time to go into like how far that network spreads and so on, but thousands of people that are imbibing really deeply, you know, transforming into carrying your spirit and the spirit of Srila Prabhupada and ultimately the compassion of Krishna through their lives in so many different ways. And the monks from that temple, who are all like these brilliant engineers and like incredible, right? They're all coming from like the high, like they come out of the highest universities, in Mumbai, in India, really in the world. They would bring the message of bhakti into the medical schools, and through that, about 150 or so doctors and nurses had become part of that spiritual community. And through Radhana Swami's guidance, they created this hospital. Now, this hospital is like, it's a top-notch hospital. They're giving top-notch health care. But the spiritual theme and the spiritual mission behind it is astounding to witness. And by being able to live there for a week or so and witness it 24 hours a day, both my wife, Geeta Priya, and I, we were speechless. Like, it was like we've never seen an institution with such deep integrity and so much sacrifice and so much spiritual power that it becomes infectious. And like Raghunath saying, I pray to get sick. Well, you know, what we see there is that the people that come, there are crazy statistics about the numbers of people that come through that hospital and change their lives. Not only that they have their health restored, but they and their families take up spiritual life and take up the practice of bhakti yoga in astounding numbers, more so than practically any like temple or you know, it's like, it's just the nature of the care and the quality of the character of the staff is transformative.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in too, because that potency you put out, Maharaj, is so powerful. We're just energy emanating out, and you have such a powerful spiritual focus and commitment that your hospital does it. The first time I came to, I brought my wife Bridget to Mumbai to meet you in 2003 or 2004. You know, she had never been to India before. And, you know, if you're an American, you've never been to India, when you land that airplane into Mumbai or New Delhi or wherever you're coming from, it's a little shocking. We're not used to it. We're not used to, there's poverty. There's sometimes maybe garbage by American standards. It's a little shocking. And I could see the shock, and a lot of you know this. I could see the shock in her eyes about the sometimes you see a five-year-old begging, holding a two-year-old, and it just throws an American off kilter. And I could tell she was shocked. And we went to the oasis of Radha Swami's temple in Mumbai. And we just started meeting people, meeting more people, meeting the monks and meeting the community, meeting the householders. And I remember 3 days later, my wife, who was initially incredibly shocked, just said, maybe we should move to Bombay. We should move to Mumbai. I was like, what are you talking about? But it's like that, because you live, you create a bubble wherever you go. The hospital is a bubble of love and compassion and joy and love. It's unbelievable. When you enter that transcendental snow globe, you can't believe what's going on there. And everybody is affected, Maharaj. And it's giving me inspiration right now to get serious about my spiritual life. Because we're all just energy shooting outwards, and we're going to